ready to hear argument in 050189, Borg Warner Corporation versus Arturo Flores.
May it please the court, Ms. Deborah Hankinson will present argument of petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal. May it please the court. This cause presents a straightforward issue for the court to decide. Whether evidence of any exposure to an asbestos-containing product is sufficient to establish causation of an asbestos-related disease. The answer to this question is a resounding no, and well-established Texas law provides the foundation for that answer. This cause therefore presents the court with the opportunity to reject the lesser causation standard used by the Court of Appeals in this case, and to clarify that plaintiffs claiming to be injured by an asbestos-containing product must meet the same standards and proof as must any other plaintiff claiming injury from a defective product. The starting point, of course, is the test for cause in fact under Texas law. And we look traditionally to Union Pump, the 1995 decision of this case, for that test. That standard is that a plaintiff must prove that the defendant's conduct or product was a substantial factor in bringing about the plaintiff's injury. A review of the evidence in this case shows why the any exposure standard that was used for causation should not be substituted for the substantial factor test. Here the CA held, relying upon its decision in Tate in 1990 and its own decision in Easter in 1999, that any exposure to any asbestos-containing product is sufficient to establish causation. On this record, there were two facts that were important to the court. Mr. Flores contended, and the Court of Appeals agreed, that there was causation because, one, Borg Warner had answered an interrogatory that its disc brake pads contained 7 to 28% chrysotile asbestos. And second, Mr. Flores' own testimony that he was exposed to dust while grinding Borg Warner brake pads.
So is all you're saying, all you would need in addition is you could, obviously we can't go back in time, could you just run an experiment where you do what he says he did to these brake pads and then you test the air and see if there's any asbestos in it?
No, Your Honor, I think it's a little bit more complicated than that in order to prove specific causation. And I think you have to look at several pieces of this court's jurisprudence to see how the rule on substantial factor has played out from an evidentiary standpoint.
I'm curious then. I mean, I've never tried any brake pad cases, but in the pipe fitter cases, you know, that's what you do. You do a demonstration and, you know, plaintiff's attorney would wear his darkest plain blue suit so the dust would get all over it. And you'd say, well, there was, asbestos in the dust. I mean, you're not going to be able to trace the fire. You're not required to trace the fibers.
Well, Your Honor, yes. I mean,
you'll be able to trace them in their body. You'll be able to trace them in their body.
Well, I mean, that's one of the things that can happen is there's testing that is done to determine if there are fibers in the lungs. But second of all, I think what you're looking at is that what Texas law would require him to prove is, first of all, that asbestos fibers were, in fact, released during the grinding. That's questionable on this record.
Is there some evidence that grinding releases asbestos fibers?
Well, the Dr. Castleman testified in this case that a lot of the fibers, the friction that occurred during the process destroyed a lot of the fibers, the most of them. But in fact, there were probably some respirable fibers. And that's as much as we have in the evidence.
Well, that expert refers to the grinding caused by the braking mechanism, not the grinding that's caused by when you're sanding a brake pad to make it fit the brake drum.
No,
that's
different. He was also talking about that as well, that the friction associated with it that he couldn't say.
What if the brake mechanic uses a file to make the brake fit, as opposed to some wheel that grinds at a high rate of speed? Fibers aren't destroyed in that instance.
Well, we don't have any evidence in this record about that, Your Honor. What we have is the testimony of Dr. Castleman. We have the fact that there was dust. What we don't know...
Barry Castleman, is that his name? Barry Castleman?
Yes, sir. What we don't have in the record is what was in the dust. What we don't have is the question about whether those fibers were actually in respirable form. And what we don't have is any evidence about the dose. The question would be what quantity and quality of respirable fibers in the dust were sufficient to cause an asbestos-related disease. And that's the piece, Justice Brister, that I think is important, and that is important when we look at the evolution of toxic tort cases back from the days when we were dealing with pipe fitters and shipyard workers and people who were dealing in that context. Now we have so many new contexts and so many new products. And what the Court of Appeals did here was say, well, if there's asbestos in a product and the plaintiff sees dust and someone says that the person has an asbestos-related disease, which was also disputed in this case, then we can assume from the fact that there was an asbestos product, dust, and a diagnosis that that particular product must have caused the disease.
I just want to be clear. You're saying there's no evidence that there is respirable asbestos in that dust in this record?
I think it's questionable.
Is it? But
here were his words. Some asbestos, some respirable fibers remain.
Why isn't that enough? Why isn't that enough? Because there are some experts in this arena that testify one fiber is enough to cause a mesothelioma.
Because there is no testimony in this record. I understand that is a theory that some experts testify to, the idea that every fiber contributes to asbestos-related disease. But that is a scientific theory. And in order for that to be competent proof under this court's tests for scientific evidence, then there must be the requisite proof under Havner and its progeny that theory, in fact, passes scientific muster. There is absolutely no evidence in this record that would support that determination. The plaintiff offered nothing to support from a scientific standpoint the idea that if you breathe a fiber of a product, then that is a cause in fact. And remember, the test is a substantial factor in causing the disease under Texas law. And that's what we're asking the court to do, is to apply the substantial factor test. And I think when you look at the elements, I think the bottom line is you're at the last element, Justice Brister, and the analysis would then be whether exposure to those particular fibers in fact caused the disease, were a substantial factor in causing the disease process. I think that when Justice
Breyer... How would you show that?
I think that through the scientific evidence, Your Honor, I think you have to look at the particular product, and I think you have to have the scientific evidence to show that there was sufficient dose, sufficient exposure to that kind of asbestos in that kind of setting for a sufficient period of time to actually increase and meet the scientific standards to show that it was probably the cause of disease.
How would you do that if the employer never did any air sampling, air monitoring, didn't warn its employees that these breaks contain asbestos, and that there are studies that indicate that asbestos exposure causes asbestosis, mesothelioma, and the like?
Well, it's done all the time. It's what this court requires before allowing scientific evidence to be admitted with respect
to causation.
Has it ever been done
in an asbestos case?
This
court does it all the time. Has this court made those decisions in an asbestos case?
This court has done it in the toxic tort context, but not specifically that I recall in the asbestos context. But
well, then it's not done all the time. I mean, we haven't done it. It's not done all the time, so that's not response.
I believe that the courts in this state, in the trial courts and the appellate courts, have been viewing Havner and its progeny from this court as being the controlling test for the admission of scientific evidence in the toxic tort context, and that they have been construing the court's decisions as including asbestos within that group of cases. So I think that uniformly that is the approach that is taken in order to have scientific evidence admitted. This case has no scientific evidence in it. This is the same kind of case that has the same kind of record that occurred when Justice Green wrote the opinion in San Antonio in the NRA ROC pretrial case. where what you had were people who were claiming exposure to asbestos and silica, and what you had was the vicious cycle of a diagnosis of a disease. And if there was a diagnosis of a disease, then you could assume that it was caused by the exposure to the product, and it was a vicious cycle without proof ever rising to the level of satisfying the substantial factor test under Texas law. So I think if you look at this court's decisions with respect to causation in the toxic tort context, which requires reliable scientific proof, and there are plenty of studies being done every day with respect to different exposures, to different kinds of products, different kinds of asbestos, and different kinds of other toxic substances.
Does the court distinguish between pleural thickening or scarring versus mesothelioma, where perhaps many experts, I think, agree that the only known cause of mesothelioma is exposure to a chrysotile or chrysotile asbestos fiber? And there's also a small group of the population that just develops it for no known reason. Should the court distinguish those type of cases?
I think the court should apply the usual rules that are in place. This court acknowledged in Galding that you had to have causation in an asbestos case, and that the exposure to the particular defendant's product caused the disease complained about. Then we have the substantial factor test that has always been in Texas law and was reaffirmed in Union Pump. In In Re Ethyl, this court wrote and acknowledged that each product that contained asbestos was different and had to be treated differently. There's a very fine amicus brief that was filed with the court by the Coalition for Litigation Justice, Inc., that gives the court the context of the fact that individual products and individual environments create different exposure scenarios and affect disease process, and that that matters in terms of it. And then finally, when we look at Havner and its progeny with respect to the requirements for the science behind causation, I think when you look at those pieces, which are well established in Texas law, there is no justification for that law also to not apply in the context of asbestos litigation.
Can some of this be worked out in defense on damages? That, you know, the amount or the exposure level was so low that, yes, perhaps it contributed to scarring and some fibers in the lungs, but our responsibility for that, given the history of smoking and other, you know, work in other fields, that contributed dramatically to the injury.
I understand, Your Honor, and I think that would still be something that could play out in the context of litigation. For example, in this context, Mr. Flores did have a long history of smoking, and there were questions about that. However, I don't know of any circumstance in which this court has lowered the proof requirements or eliminated elements of a cause of action with respect to the threshold inquiry for liability, saying that you can work it out in the damage phase. I think that in order to survive directed verdict, in order to be able to get to the jury, you're going to have evidence of each of the elements of the cause of action.
Well,
and then once you get to the
point... But that goes back to my earlier question. If there is some evidence in this record, and I hear that you're disputing it now, but if there's some evidence that his exposure to that dust, which contained respirable fibers, would be located in his lungs, and then there's some causation there, maybe not substantially aggravating the injury, but if there's some evidence of the presence there that was attributable to the defendant, then does the question become, well, how much? What are the damages?
Well, first of all, I need to clarify that we don't have that in this case. I mean, we don't have evidence that there are fibers in his lungs. I mean, this case is a very small record that has nothing in it. But the bottom line, again, if you look at the amicus brief that I referred the court to, you'll see that there is discussion that if all of us had our lungs examined today, someone would probably find some asbestos fibers in them, because asbestos is everywhere, and through the course of our lives, we've all breathed some in the ordinary course of things. So, again, I think, Justice Jefferson, I don't think that that in and of itself should be there, and there's no reason to compromise the legal standards that this court already has in place, because it is necessary to be able to actually show substantial factor causation that rather than breathing dust that may have contained fibers should be enough. Look at the evidence in this case. Dr. Castleman just
Let me ask you just a moment.
Yes, Your Honor.
I'm unsure of your position on Lorman.
Your Honor, I think with respect to Lorman, Lorman dates back to the 1980s, and I think it had its day. For all practical purposes, I don't think the court needs to adopt Lorman because I think you already have. I don't think you characterized it as Lorman, but I think that if the court uses its precedent in the scientific area, that's what Lorman said. Lorman said you can't just have any exposure. You're going to have, you know, sufficient exposure in terms of time, you know, quantity, quality, et cetera, in order to say that there was causation. I think that's what Havner and its progeny do. So without using that name, I think the court over the last, you know, 15 years or so, perhaps stretching to 20, has done what the federal court did in Lorman, but through a different avenue. So I see no need for the court to specifically adopt that test. I think that the court gets to the same place by applying its existing precedent.
Further questions? Thank you, Ms. Hankinson. The court is ready to hear arguments from the respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Brett Blumenthal will present argument to the respondent.
May it please the court, at the risk of using a tired rhetorical technique, I'd like to begin by saying what this case is not about. This case is not about the plaintiff's desire to have a liberalized standard of causation or a different standard of causation, or the Court of Appeals' failure to follow the Texas requirement of requiring proof of causation in an asbestos case. It is our position that the Texas Court of Appeals properly applied the law, and in fact, it is the petitioner that's seeking a deviation, more specific proof than is required. The Court of Appeals clearly required plaintiff in this case to prove that exposure to asbestos was a cause, in fact, of the plaintiff's injuries. That proof was supplied. This case,
Well, I don't understand that. The Court of Appeals wrote, the plaintiff need not prove that product could emit respirable asbestos fibers. In this case, there's evidence that the plaintiff inhaled dust, that when ground for fitting, brake pads contain asbestos that can produce respirable asbestos, and the plaintiff suffers from asbestosis. But it seems to me like there has to be, you have to at least prove that if you ground up these brake pads the way they were being ground, asbestos would be released that you could breathe in that could cause asbestosis. Don't you at least have to prove that?
I think that proof, well, let me put it this way. I think that the Court of Appeals was correct that there need not be expert testimony that the dust contained asbestos fibers.
How else would you know?
Well, I think that if you have a product that contains up to 28% asbestos by weight, which was proven in this case, and the plaintiff testified that over a four-year period he ground brakes several times a week and they created a lot of dust and he breathed that dust, I think it is reasonable to infer that the plaintiff breathed asbestos dust from that product. That is our position. And we think that's a common sense position. We also think that precedent supports that. We cited some cases in our brief, the Fiberboard versus Pool case out of Texarkana.
But if the other side introduces evidence that the fibers get all smushed up and destroyed in the course of grinding by somebody that's knows something more than I saw in a dusty place, then wouldn't we have to need something more than just dust?
Well, that's not in this record, Your Honor, number one. Number two, then you've got a fact issue. I would think that if the plaintiff wants to win, the plaintiff would present its own proof, assuming that it's available, of the scientific composition of the fibers. It may be that someday on some record the defendant can produce such compelling proof that its that the dust coming out of its products that it establishes as a matter of law that causation can't exist. But of course that's not this case. As counsel pointed out, I would describe the record in this case as economical. And there is the but the plaintiff did produce the requisite evidence. The plaintiff produced, and comparing it to these other cases, I think demonstrates that the proof is considerably stronger. This plaintiff showed that, again, over a four-year period, for several times a week, I think up to 10 times a week, he ground brakes, which created dust, which he breathed. That kind of proof wasn't really available in the Easter case that that is cited, where the plaintiff relied entirely on circumstantial evidence, eyewitnesses who were in the vicinity of the decedent who used the product to generate dust, who said he was around. We can infer that he was exposed to the same thing I was. Here we have direct evidence.
What is the evidence of dose exposure?
The evidence of dose exposure is simply the plaintiff's testimony as to the number of times he used the product, the years that he used the product, and the circumstances. There is no fiber count. There is no measurement of the amount of dust in the air in his vicinity.
Which is
OSHA sets, or used to, may still set standards on dose in the air or parts per, used to be million cubic feet, maybe it's a different standard now, that is acceptable. How do we know that the amount of asbestos or number of asbestos fibers in the air were not acceptable if you don't know what the dose is in the air that that Mr. Flores was subject to?
Well, the there is testimony in the record from Dr. Castleman who said that the use of brakes has been reported to produce levels approaching that of the lower limit allowed by OSHA or upper limit allowed by OSHA. In 1970, those limits have been raised, so the inference is reasonable that those limits have been lowered dramatically. So the evidence is reasonable that those exposures do exceed the OSHA levels.
But the dose exposure depends not just on how many fibers come out of grinding. It depends upon the size and nature of the room in which the work is being done, the ventilation, whether there's a respirator being used or some other kind of, it depends on lots of things that a study about what happened elsewhere or in other situations may not establish in a particular case like this one, doesn't it?
Well, yes, those measurements are affected by those factors. I submit that the minimal proof that was necessary in this case to support causation was the plaintiff's own testimony about the grinding and his face being in it and the heavy level of dust that was in the air. It simply has to be inferred. There's no measurements in this case. There's no dust levels. And, of course, the plaintiff's circumstances of exposure were at a Sears. And at that time, there was no testing going on of asbestos levels in a Sears brake repair.
You haven't shown, says your opposition, that that four-year exposure to dust, whatever its contents, was a substantial factor in bringing about the injury. Now, how do you counter that?
Well, we do have Dr. Bukowski's testimony, number one, that each and every exposure does cause asbestos, but also her general testimony about the nature of asbestosis. Asbestosis, unlike mesothelioma, which is, I believe, Justice Medina was asking about before, is a cumulative disease. It is mesothelioma does depend to some degree on a threshold level of exposure, but once you get there, it's a cancer. It develops without reference to just how heavy that fiber burden is. But asbestosis is a cumulative disease. The more you inhale, the more likely you are to get it, the more severe it is, the more your fiber burden is. And Dr. Bukowski did testify about those characteristics of asbestosis in her testimony. So, I mean, you could take it to a level that we don't take it to, which is each and every exposure is a substantial cause of some disease. Yes, there are exposures that occur in the ambient air without special heavy exposures, and those are de minimis exposures. They've been recognized in the legal literature for decades, really, as not creating a legal cause of action. But we're talking about exposures over a long period of time, over a four-year period of time. And I think that her testimony is not simply conclusory, but is supported by all of that background discussion of asbestosis.
If we were to follow Judge Ms. Hankinson's argument, well, that would require the plaintiff to prove substantial exposure and causation to each of the specific manufacturer's product. For example, if your client worked in Sears, you know, they may use products supplied by BorgWarner, Wagner, and a whole list of asbestos manufacturing companies that manufacture asbestos brake linings. Do they have to show substantial exposure to each one of them?
Yes, we do. We believe that that's the current burden under Texas law, is that to hold a manufacturer liable for asbestos-related injury, you have to show that that manufacturer's product was a substantial cause, a substantial contributing cause of the plaintiff's injury. So each manufacturer, we can't just show de minimis exposure to some and hold them in. It's defendant-specific, in other words. Yes, that is a requirement. We believe we've met that as to BorgWarner. There was evidence in this case of different products that the plaintiff was exposed to, and there were findings by the jury. The Texas law at the time took that into account by a numerical offset.
How hard is it, apart from epidemiological stuff, how hard is it to do a testing, find out how much parts per million there are from grinding certain kinds of products a certain amount of time in the year?
Well, there have been
expensive testing. Is that?
I would say it's expensive, but I will say that there are industrial hygienists and other experts that can conduct that type of testing if they're provided with similar materials. My understanding is, I don't know this. I was about to say, I don't know whether products are available from BorgWarner that resemble those type of brakes that were used in the early 70s. But if they were available, I believe testing could be done. It's a matter of expense.
You know, it struck me that the quality of the exposure evidence in this case was virtually identical to what it was in the In Re Rock opinion. The argument that you're making today was not sustained in that case. Are you saying that that case, the standard was too restrictive? How would you reconcile that?
No, Your Honor, I wouldn't. I would say that the facts are very distinguishable in this case and in Rock. In Rock, my understanding is, and of course you wrote the opinion, that none of the plaintiffs personally identified the manufacturer of the asbestos-containing products that were used. In Rock, I believe the plaintiffs relied upon general testimony that they were in the area where the products were used, general testimony that the products created dust, and they relied on their diagnosis of asbestosis as confirming their exposure to injurious quantities of dust. We don't do that. Our evidence, the evidence that we've got in this case, is independent. We say that Mr. Flores' testimony and the evidence that the BorgWarner brakes did indeed contain asbestos is totally independent of the diagnosis. And the diagnosis, the finding of abnormalities, is not dependent on the fact that he was exposed to asbestos. Now, the fact that the exposure history does identify the source of those abnormalities, but it doesn't confirm the existence of disease. So it's not circular the way Ms. Hankinson suggested. That I think there does have to be cause of it. To the extent that Rock implied, and I don't think it did this, that expert testimony is required to prove ingestion of a particular dose, I would disagree with that standard, but I don't think it does that. I think that the language that I believe Justice Heck quoted out of Flores' opinion itself, when the court says respirable asbestos fibers, the plaintiff doesn't need to show respirable fibers. I think that means the plaintiff doesn't need to produce expert testimony that there was actual inhalation, but the plaintiff does need to show exposure. We did that in this case.
Well, but there are kinds of asbestos exposure fibers that are respirable and causative of injury and others that are not. And I'm not aware of any evidence in this case of which type of exposure that there was.
There is not. Okay. Our position here, and it's fairly straightforward, is that once the plaintiff proves that the defendant's products contained substantial amount of asbestos, which we did.
It doesn't matter what kind.
And once, well, in this case it was chrysotile, but once the plaintiff proves that they handled the product in a way that generated significant dust that they breathed, then they have met their burden of production of showing exposure to respirable asbestos fibers. And if the defendant can disprove that by its own evidence, then they're free to do so. In this case, we
all... Is that the same circular argument that you say doesn't exist in this case?
Well, I think the circular
because
part
of... Because having not shown that this is the type of asbestos that causes the injury that's alleged, just that the exposure occurred, and then the person has the asbestosis, that's the same circular argument that was rejected in Rock.
Yeah, but certainly you have in these break cases, an expert will testify that the exposure to the chrysotile fiber in these brake pucks does cause asbestosis or an asbestos-related disease.
Yes. Yes, we had an expert that testified that here. I think Justice Green's point is that that the assumption... we are not depending on our expert's diagnosis of the disease to prove the exposure. We, in Rock, I think they said, see, proof we were exposed or our plaintiffs were exposed because the doctor diagnosed an asbestos-related disease. The doctor diagnosed an asbestos-related disease assuming that the plaintiff had been exposed, so that was circular. Here, the plaintiff's proof of exposure is independent of the diagnosis. We would say, standing alone, Mr. Flores' testimony and the answers to interrogatories allow a reasonable jury to conclude that there has been injurious exposure, significant exposure.
And the independent proof is that he says that he was breathing these asbestos dust.
He says he was breathing
and
dust.
Is that the same thing in Rock, though? But we have asbestos products that are turned into a dust form, and he's standing there in this room that's full of dust, and that would be an independent evidence of exposure.
If I don't think the evidence was direct and the circumstantial evidence of exposure was as compelling as it is here, if you're suggesting that in order to attribute causation, an expert having diagnosed disease can't assume exposure, then no one ever would be diagnosed with asbestos disease because in every case of asbestosis, the expert has to rely on the plaintiff's occupational history and whatever other evidence exists to assume that there is exposure. I mean, we are not depending on Dr. Bukowski. Dr. Bukowski was cross-examined, and the testimony was cited in the brief that she had no personal knowledge that he was exposed to BorgWarner or asbestos-containing breaks. And of course she didn't. She's a doctor. Her job is to see what's going on in the lung. What she saw in the lung was characteristic of asbestos exposure, but she can't be sure absent either his testimony or an assumption that he was exposed to.
Let's say that we adopt in total the briefing that of your opponent and say this is the standard and you haven't met it, there's no evidence. How would a person like Mr. Flores make the case? How would you demonstrate under your opposition's view of the world that the exposure is a substantial factor to their injury?
Well, I imagine that we would have to independently test the brake product if we could obtain it to ensure that or to demonstrate that there have been that it emitted hazardous levels or excessive levels of asbestos dust, if such a test is possible. I will add parenthetically that the Texas legislature has recently circumscribed asbestos litigation, to put it mildly, in the state and has attempted to control the litigation by reducing the availability of those kind of claims. But again, obviously, by answering the question, I'm not conceding that should be the standard.
And can't the other side rebut whatever exposure there may have been to these mechanics by offering, perhaps they did in this case, the so-called frostrite defense, where the grinding, some experts say, destroyed 99% of the fibers?
Absolutely, and of course, most of our testimony focused on the fresh grinding of the new product as opposed to the blowout of the old. But yes, and that's my essential ultimate point, is that is that, yes, the record here was not as extensively developed as it might have been, but once we showed these threshold facts, the defense, we have presented legally sufficient proof, and the defense could rebut it by its own evidence, which it has more control of in any event.
So there was no biopsy taken here?
No, Your Honor, there was no biopsy. If there are no other questions, I'll cede the remainder of my time.
Thank you.
I agree with Justice Green that this case and the record in it is no different than that he considered in deciding the Rock decision while he was on the San Antonio Court of Appeals. The evidence in this case, briefly, from Dr. Castleman was this, that brake mechanics can be exposed to asbestos by grinding brake pads, that one 1970 study showed that exposure from servicing brake pads could be significant. The entirety of his testimony, as it is attached as tab C to our brief, he said he knew absolutely nothing about BorgWarner products. Dr. Pukowski had no specific opinion about brake mechanics and asbestos exposure. She did say that Mr. Flores does not have pleural thickening, plaques, meso, or lung cancer, that in fact there was scarring on the lungs consistent with asbestos exposure, but also with other things like smoking. She based her diagnosis on his work history that he was exposed to asbestos. So although she was unable to say that he had inhaled any respirable asbestos fibers from a BorgWarner disc brake pad, she concluded, quote, from his exposure history, I infer it was from grinding brake pads. But she could not testify that BorgWarner disc brakes definitely release dust. She said, I can only infer. That is ROC, and ROC is the proper analysis for why this evidence is not legally sufficient to show cause and fact, substantial factor as required under Texas law. Mr. Rosenthal alluded to the scientific theory behind this case that he says that Dr. Castleman testified to, that every fiber contributes to the disease. There is no science in this record that supports that or that this court could draw that conclusion. And I alerted Mr. Rosenthal before argument to a recent decision by a court in Pennsylvania, which we will provide to the court. It's available on Westlaw, in which the judge there conducted in a very extensive hearing.
Who was the judge?
I don't recall the name of the judge.
Judge Wiener?
No, it's a state court judge, John. And I don't recall the name of the judge. The citation is at 2006 Westlaw 2404008. It was August 17th, In Re Toxic Substances, in which the court there rejected and said there was no science to support the fact that the idea of if you've inhaled a fiber, it then contributes to the disease process in a way that would satisfy causation. This gentleman had 40 years as a brake mechanic. He was required under Texas law to come forward and show under the Texas tests for causation, substantial factor causation, that his exposure during that 40 years over a 4 or 5 year period of time where he worked with BorgWarner brakes several times a week for 3 or 4 minutes was a substantial factor in causing the disease he claims to have had. It was his burden to prove that. The decision in In Re Rock applies the principles that exist under Texas law for substantial factor causation and for scientific proof that shows what a plaintiff needs to prove. And we ask that this court, in fact, apply that standard in asbestos cases and not adopt a lesser standard. Mr. Flores should have shown, and the legal standard should be, that the product complained about released asbestos fibers during grinding or during the exposure. There were actually fibers released, and that those fibers were in respirable form, and that the dose, the quantity and quality of respirable fibers in the dust should be sufficient to cause an asbestos-related disease, and that the exposure in the particular case, in fact, caused the particular injury complained about. We ask the court to use this case as a vehicle to clarify that that is the legal standard that should be applied. The court need break no new ground with respect to the law. It need only apply the existing precedent in the context of asbestos litigation to reach that result and bring clarity to Texas law.
Thank you, Ms. Hankinson. The cause is submitted, and that concludes oral arguments for today. Marshall will now adjourn the court.
All rise.